2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, my co-host, Matt Pajak, is in the house. What's going on, Matt? Got a big guest today. You could say it's our unofficial third host at this point.
Yeah, he could be our unofficial third host. He's back by popular demand. People have been asking for this since the last one. So I had to get him back on here. And we got a really interesting topic today. I want to dive into like consistency.
Who is it?
And routine. We're not even going to tell anybody. We're
not going to tell anyone. All right.
What we're going to do is he's going to start talking. We'll see if people can identify the voice. No, it's Brandon Donovan.
Brandon Donovan.
The St. Louis Cardinals. I like the way Jeff says it.
Donovan. I know you do. I was trying to avoid it. I was trying not to go full Boston on Brendan's name. What's going on, Brendan? How are you, man?
Good morning, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Always, dude. Of course.
Yeah, fresh from you got some new scenery down there. You're not on your back porch in Jupiter anymore. Heard you left the state. We're not going to say where to, but are you enjoying your new surroundings?
Yeah, we like it. The only issue is Wi-Fi. We're out in the sticks, so we're going strong right now, but hopefully that'll cut out. But it's exciting, man. I mean, we had a little girl, and it was a little closer to home, so we like our free babysitters, meaning our grandparents.
Oh, yeah, I get that. As a father of three, man, I can 100% relate to that one. That's why we have never left Massachusetts.
It's been nice.
But congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. And I want to bring this up because I made a recommendation to you when you were in Philly earlier this year, and then I was in Philly this past weekend, and I did quite enjoy my Angelus. All right, I got the cheesesteak, got a pizza, but through the experience, you weren't as high on Angelus as I was, but through the experience, I was like, I could kind of see why Brendan might not be so high on Angelus, because it's a pain in the ass. It's like, it's cash only. You got to go there and order. There's like a line before you order, and then there's a long wait after you order. And, you know, I didn't really consider those variables until, yeah, you know, I lived it myself this past weekend. But Brendan, I want you to share your Angelus experience.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It was something we were excited about. I went with Burleson and Gorman. We were in Philly. And we said, you know what? I got my buddy Matt gave me this recommendation. He's always the food guy when we go on the road. And so we went. And first off, we probably stood out like a sore thumb because we didn't know what to do. Where do we order? Where do we stand? What do we order? We're like, we are just not off to a good start. So we order, and then we're standing there, and we were still standing there. And I was like, man, like, what's going on here? So I'm like, we're going to miss the bus to the field. So we get the pizza, and I wish we just had given ourselves more of a window, because it was just like, just shoving pizza down your face, and then you go back to the hotel, get an Uber back to the hotel, change, and then jump on the bus and go. So it was a good pizza, absolutely. But I think it was more of like a user error thing, because we didn't give ourselves enough of a window to really appreciate the pizza.
Went with the pizza and not the cheesesteaks, huh?
We went with the pizza, yeah.
Interesting. Have you had the cheesesteaks at the stadium? I've seen multiple articles about how good the cheesesteaks are at the stadium. Did you crush some of those?
I had one of those. Yeah. Unfortunately, I had it when we went to Philly, my neck locked up, so I couldn't do much activity. So I try to stay away from the cheesesteaks as much as possible because I wasn't as active. But they're phenomenal. The guys back there, they do a fantastic job. There's a sheet also where you can fill it out like what you want, and they'll have one ready for you at the end of the game. You can go in there and get whatever you want on it. It's pretty amazing. But I think it's also a tactic too, because not only is Philly a hard place to play, but you're also a little sluggish because you're crushing cheesesteaks.
Somebody said that there was an article about some team and some player who ate like a dozen cheesesteaks or something It might have been like 30 over the course of like a weekend. Like,
yeah, I think the record someone was talking about was like 24 and a half in a 4-game span.
Yes, exactly. There's like records as to how many you've eaten, which adds to the complication because they're challenging your manhood. Can you eat cheesesteaks?
They're big too. They're huge. So, I mean, I don't know if that's a record you necessarily want to win if you're a player.
There's a performance guy for a club that I encountered once or twice, and he was talking about this, and I think he put down like 20 or 21.
That's who I'm thinking of, because that was one of our strength coaches told me that.
Yep.
That's wild.
And he's like a smaller guy. He's not like one of like those big meathead strength and conditioning guys. He's fit, like smaller fit, definitely wiry and strong, but yeah, it was crazy.
That's who puts him down though, man. I think
what is your next though? What's your cheesesteak order? Do you have like a cheese that you put on there? Do you put peppers on there, onions? How do you do your cheesesteak?
I do like peppers and onions on mine. I'm a big onions fan. I think I could eat an onion like an apple. It probably sounds disgusting, but to me, I just absolutely love onions.
You look like an onion.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. as long as I don't smell like an onion, then
you're good.
So if you're eating like apples, you probably may.
Yeah. But pretty standard, pretty easy order. No dietary restrictions when it comes to cheesesteaks.
Do you go Whiz?
Yeah, I'll do Whiz. Because you can't have it a little dry, you know, you gotta have some Whiz on there. Not too much, so I'm not a huge like seasoning or sauce person, so I don't want it overpowering, but I need like a little bit.
I go with the whiz wit. I get a steak and cheese in Massachusetts with provolone. Like, I'm there for a reason. I want to experience their culture.
Oh yeah,
I get the Cooper Sharp. That was what they suggested at Angela's. That's like their most popular Cooper Sharp.
Yeah, I got that in the fridge right now.
Where did that name come from? Cooper Sharp.
I think it's the brand.
Oh, is it like a type of cheese or?
It's the brand of cheese, and it's like a sharper American, I believe.
Mm.
Because I bought it by accident, thinking that it was sharp cheddar, and then was surprised when I came home and it was sharp American, which still doesn't taste like much of anything. But
yeah, so Cooper is a cheese brand in Philadelphia.
Gotcha.
You're getting sharp American cheese. From a cheese brand in Philadelphia.
There you go.
I didn't know
I need a little bit of a history lesson. Why is it the Philly cheesesteak? Like, why did it originate in Philly? Does anyone know?
I don't know.
I'm just going to Google why Philly cheesesteaks. But they, I was
like, all the answers come up. Why do they have so many row houses? It's like 15 different things. Because Pat and Harry Oliveri, brothers who ran a hot dog stand in South Philadelphia in the 1930s, are credited with inventing the sandwich.
Hmm.
So it probably just took off.
Interesting. Pat's. It was because their Jewish customers didn't eat meat and cheese together. So they made it without the cheese initially.
There you go.
Interestingly enough, I was talking to my buddy who's from Philly. It's not even really interesting, but it's weird that like you go to Philly and you get these cheesesteaks and they're huge and they're so good and they're all consistently good. If you go to all the good spots, they're all consistently good. And you go anywhere else in the country and for whatever reason, they don't make cheesesteaks the same way. Like they're not like, there's like something about Philly where they make them that certain way where it's like, I don't know.
I think it's the cuts. Like, I think that's a big part of it. I will say, I don't even think it's the best sandwich, Philly sandwich in Philly. That's the roast pork.
That's going down a completely different rabbit hole. You should actually, Brennan, take notes on that next time you're in Philly.
DeNick's roast pork at Terminal Market. It's super quick, too. Like, you'll be in and out in 3 minutes, even if the line is long. They just bang
roast
them out.
Pork?
Yeah. So they roast the pork, and it's in like this gravy that it sits in, and then they slice it. On like a deli slicer. They shave off sharp provolone, so it's like a stronger provolone, And then they have like
broccoli Rob,
like a wet salad that's broccoli Rob in like a beef gravy or like a pork gravy type of deal. And they kind of dip the sandwich in that. It's incredible. It's so good. Not like over seasoned. It's just like perfect. Really good.
Get it.
I think it's better. I think it's better than cheesesteaks. It's a little bit, you feel a little more classy because you're not hammering down cheese whiz, you know. Yeah. But they're really good. They have them in a bunch of places throughout Philly too.
If people are still with us here, I hope they are. I hope they enjoyed that conversation on the Philly food scene. We do want to talk about something of substance today, other than food substance, and that's consistency. And we thought, who better to talk about consistency and the underpinnings of that consistency than Brendan Donovan, a career 280 hitter in the big leagues, who hit 278 this year, 284 in 2023, and 281 in 2022. You go look at the Baseball Reference page, and year over year, it's pretty much the same thing. It's kind of like set your clock to it. You can set your clock to Brendan Donovan hitting 280. So anyway, there's kind of like three different aspects of this, and hopefully Brendan will give us a peek under the hood. You know, routines, using data to kind of track, and then kind of how that translates to performance on the field. So try and keep this as structured and tidy as possible. But straight out of the chute, Brendan, the importance of routines. How important are routines? How important is consistent sleep, eating, body maintenance during the season?
Yeah. So your routine can't be superstitious, because there's days that it's going to get thrown off. Travel, rain delays, maybe you just need to let your body recover a little bit longer before you get after it. So that's the most important thing. But for me, the sleep and the diet are the two things that probably are the ones that are like very inconsistent, because like we mentioned, travel, different beds. If you're into your pillows, different pillows, different time zones, all these things get messed up. And then eating, you may get in a little later and you may be hungry. And while sometimes it's not great to eat late at night, like if you're hungry, I'd rather go to bed full personally, and then because then I can get up and kind of just start my day. So those two are kind of hard to control. I try to do a good job of trying to keep, I'm not 18 anymore. Like I can't be slamming cheesesteaks and pizzas all the time, but I do try to watch what I eat. It just also deter that based off of just my activity level. You know, if I'm very active, then I probably need to keep the calories up, calories in, calories out. But and then on the baseball side of things, the routine is like, I have like kind of the fundamental, the basics. Like for me, it's all about like when I get into the field every day, it's kind of around the same thing. I go to my locker, I get changed, I'll grab something to eat, and I go straight to the weight room. I'll make a drink with my vitamins and my supplements for the day. And then for me, it's all about like getting my body ready. I have like a 15 to 20 minute routine of just like body prep, where I just pretty much start at my feet and then I run it like up the chain. Feet, ankles, calves, hips, shoulders, spine, and then sometimes your brain too. You gotta make sure that's in check. And then from there, I do some patterning exercises, and then I go straight to the cage. So consistency, I think, is extremely important, because the work is the thing that you can fall back on, right? Your mentality, your preparation, and then your effort. Those are the three things that I personally think that I can control in baseball, because once you get out on the field, you can't really control anything else. You can hit a ball hard, but there might be a guy standing there. You may take a pitch and he may have just made a good pitch. Like there's certain things that you just can't control. So those are the three things that I like to control, and they keep me as consistent as possible.
Yeah. And you know, you talked a little bit about your routine there and the different routines, and I think that's really helpful insight. I think kind of taking it a step further now, how does that apply? So how much of a differentiator is it having those established routines? You've advanced through amateur baseball, you know, you got your Cape Cod Baseball League sweatshirt on, you played at South Alabama, then you got into minor league baseball, advanced or every level you put in the fall league. You've played with a lot of guys, you know, along the way, and then now obviously in the big leagues. But how much of a differentiator is it to have that routine established as you make your way up the chain to the big leagues? And then, you know, obviously you don't need to call anybody out, but obviously not everybody has a dedicated routine like that. And have you seen that having that routine and being consistent about sleep, nutrition, body maintenance is, you know, a separator, you know, more or less for some guys as they get promoted?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that it's trial and error. You come across things that you may try and you're like, I don't like that. And then you come across things that you're like, man, I really like that. Like, for example, Matt and I have known each other since 2020. And one thing that really works for me, keeping me healthy and honestly, I think keeping me stable and explosive, is actually a balance protocol, something that Matt and I do. We work together on every off season and in season maintenance. But it's all trial and error, right? If you look back at some things that you did when you're in the minor leagues, you're like, why did I do that? And then there's actually times in the big leagues where I look back and I'd be like, I did this when I was in low A and it helped me fix this. Let me add this back into the routine. So you have I call it like your toolbox. You have your toolbox of tools, right? And you try to throw as many tools in that box as possible. But you also need to be able to pull some out whenever you're ready. So it's like you have your foundational things, like I said, like sleep, nutrition, body. And it's like, all right, well, if you want to do a deeper dive, then you start to like, all right, well, my body isn't moving this way. Maybe I need to supplement this in it. But I think that comes with just wanting to understand your body, wanting to learn more about your body, and wanting to learn more about the game and how can you add all those things. So it's like my brain never stops ticking. So when the game's over, I'll take some time on the way back to the apartment to vent a little bit, or whether it's good or bad things I want to get off my chest. And then it's just like flipping gears into, all right, what's the work look like for tomorrow? And then that's how, all right, well, my routine is this. Maybe I want to supplement this in. Maybe I want to subtract this out. Maybe I want to talk to guys like you, Matt, who track a lot of the data, and like, all right, what can we add into the routine today? And I think that comes from just, like I said, trial and error, things that understanding my style of play and how can I add and subtract things to continue to push that in the right direction. And I learned a lot of this in the big leagues from Paul Goldschmidt. When I first got to the big leagues, they're like, hey, you got two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. So listen, watch, and don't speak when spoken to, unless you're spoken to. But it's like one of those things that's like, yeah, you can talk, but like you should, before you open your mouth, you should really know kind of these guys' routines and just kind of stay out of their way because they've been doing it for so long. And so I would sit in the cage and I would just watch. I would try to be with the first one in. And I would just sit and I would watch. And then eventually, whenever I built up enough courage, I would ask, hey, like, why do you do this or why do you do that? And same thing on defense, I would sit and I would watch their routines. And it's like, they're so consistent. Like every single day it's consistent. And I got to thinking, I was like, I've always been pretty routine oriented, but I was like, I need to go a little deeper on this routine. So I asked Goldie, I was like, hey, can I train with you? And he's like, yeah, are you moving to Florida? I said, yeah, we bought a place in Florida. We'll be down there. He's like, cool. I'll call you when I get down there. So we go to this golf gym down in Florida. Shout out Colby. It's called The Stable. It's a very awesome gym. And I just got to see kind of how he goes about his business in the off season. I'm like, this makes a lot of sense. You know, just the attention to detail and how everything's kind of just like structured around consistency and keeping everything in line. So you have like, it's just a gradual push, a gradual climb. It's not like a rocket ship. You're not just going straight up. Like you're just like gradually climbing as you start from your off season through your season. That's how he's been able to maintain for so long. But someone that I consider a large role model in this sport is him, because it's not just showing up and going to the cage and hitting. It's like everything you do that day from the minute you wake up is centered around how can I get myself ready to play and perform at the highest level tonight. So I went off on a, I did a little bit of weave there, but I tried to bring it back in at the end.
Let me, I'm probably jumping ahead a little bit just based on what our outline is for the show, but how hard has it been? Because you've played a lot of different positions. You've hit in a variety of spots in the Cardinals lineup over the last year, few years. How hard is it to kind of maintain that consistency knowing that you might have a different role on a given night versus the night before? Like how much adjustment does it take there having to move to different positions, the infield, the outfield? Like what is the, how much do you change your routine and adjust it when you have to go and play a different position or hit in a different spot in the lineup?
Yeah. So on the offensive side of things, the only thing that really changes is you may or may not hit in the first inning. So for me, it's like the routine of when I get my machine work or my traject or whatever I'm doing that day may happen in the bottom of the first inning. If we're at home versus, you know, if I'm leading off from in the two or the four, the, it may happen before the anthem. I may get that routine. So it's just depending on where I'm hitting in the lineup may dictate like when I get my machine work. Cause I like to do, I call it like getting up to game speed, doing something extremely hard and extremely challenging speed wise right before the game. Just, I feel like it just primes me to get in the box and be able to handle mid 90s with a good breaking ball or changeup, whatever it is. And then on the defensive side of things, they do a good job of communicating with me on, hey, you may be at this position this day. Last year was a weird year. I actually would have played more positions, but I just came off an elbow surgery. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to manage that as well. But you also kind of get into, I understand the manager just as well as he understands me. I kind of, I've been with him for 3 years. So just how he thinks. And I tend to look at like the lineup card and be like, this is, all right, this is where we may pinch it here. We may pinch run here. This guy may come in for defense here. So that may slide me here. I kind of have a good idea of how he thinks. So towards the end of last year, I would start the game at second. And then if we had a lead eighth, ninth, I knew I was going to left. So it's like kind of just like mentally wrapping your mind around, I may be in a different position and you're going to get the first ball because it's always going to find you. That's just how this game works. And but on the preparation side of things is if I'm starting that position, I want to hit the reps that day. And I call it just like touching a position, go out in the outfield, get a couple, whether you run after them or not, if your legs are a little beat up, just like get a mental read, maybe a first step, and then just make sure you're touching all the positions. And I love for the infield things, the we call it the red rocket, the little like heater machine. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
They shoot like the light flight balls. They're actually pretty hard to catch because they have so much spin and speed on them.
And they're a little smaller too than a regular baseball, right?
Yeah, they're like just from the feel, they're a little smaller, but they're also like, I mean, there's so much spin that like for me, it taught me a lot of things. It's like if my presentation isn't there, if my hand is a little too much here, then it's not going to hit my pocket and stick. That's a large part of the routine as well as getting out there and trying to hit 10 minutes max, like five or like of every angle, and then I'm good to go.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code baseball. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
No team wins the World Series without having great teamwork. And teamwork can also protect your financial legacy and your family's future. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents are the perfect teammates when shopping for customized, affordable life insurance. They can find you the right policy to keep your financial legacy safe. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less, while SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
And are they just rolling those out like through a bucket of balls, just feeding them through the machine and just shooting them at you and they're kind of knuckling and stuff?
Yeah, they just, boom, just shoot them in there. Stubby Clapp does an awesome job. He's like, sends us out a time of when he's going to be on the, sitting on the, he's like, I'll be outside with the red rocket if anybody wants some. And he's just sitting there, just doom, doom. And it's pretty cool. You get really good feedback from that thing.
Stubby Clapp with the red rocket.
That's right. That's
awesome. You talked about Paul Goldschmidt as someone that, you know, you observed and you really appreciate, you know, the routine and the consistency on a day-to-day basis. But obviously there was a long period of your baseball playing life that didn't have Paul Goldschmidt in your dugout or in your clubhouse. You know, where do you think because it's your discipline to these routines is kind of like an underlying trait that probably to a certain degree contributed to your success and contributed to you getting to the big leagues. Where do you think that discipline was founded? You know, just in terms of like how you grew up, you know, I don't know if you want to speak to that at all.
Yeah, I think the older I get, the more I start to see it. I think it was growing up in a military family. My dad served in the military. He retired as a colonel. He did 30 years. He flew the Blackhawks. So, you know, in the military, it's discipline, right? And I think that was instilled in me, obviously, like, it wasn't a tough childhood by any means, like, but, you know, there was a sense of accountability. And I also got to see from my mom when my dad was off doing deployments, my mom was, she was the same person every day. Talk about consistency. No matter what's going on, my mom was the same person, getting kids to school, getting kids to practice. No matter what it was, she making sure there was groceries, everything. She was consistency. So I think seeing that at a young age, day to day, I think has a lot to do with it. I think the adaptability thing goes along with the changing positions. I think that's also moves, right? Moving from one location to the next. While we didn't have a ton of moves, we still had some moves, right? Coming into new schools, I think that's learning how to adapt and adjust on the fly. I think that has a lot to do with being able to change positions. I just love the work. I don't know if it's because I can control the work, but I love like getting to the field, and I actually love doing my routine because it's something that I can control. Because then when I go out there for the game, I can't really control that at all. That could have something to do with it. Or maybe I just love seeing a finished product, right? I mean, there's a couple times where Matt's had to snap me back in, and I'm like, dude, I'm lost. And he's like, no, you're not. This is where you're at. This is your batted ball data. Like, you're fine. But I do love looking, back at like the first day of spring training and then like seeing a finished product. And I think you start to factor in all those good times, all those bad times. And it's like, that's the part that I enjoy, is just like seeing the finished product. And how do you do that? You just show up each day and you just like not check the boxes. You want to like attack the boxes, but like, this is my list for the day. And I love just like knocking those things off. It's satisfying to me.
Yeah. Win the day.
That's it.
It's one at a time, because 162 is a lot, you know? Well, we talked about the routines a lot, and, you know, obviously the stakes have never been higher from a baseball playing standpoint than when you're actually in the big leagues and you're playing on TV every night. And you have access, whether it's StatCast data with the Cardinals provide, or, you know, the Loden app, we can talk about that here in a second, to objective feedback that kind of reinforces how good your routines are, just in terms of giving you biofeedback and giving you feedback on, you know, how your body's actually performing. I think, you know, we've talked about in the past how, you know, baseball is a very mental game, and, you know, your perception of where you are or where your body's at or whatever it may be one thing, but to have objective data that maybe, you know, shows evidence to the contrary, that can be powerful just in terms of kind of like snapping you out of your funk mentally. Because like, I mean, you know, it's, you play baseball at any level of the game, it's a very mental game. There's quotes about it, Yogi Berra or something about the game's 100% half mental. I don't know what the exact quote is, but, that's a long way to go about saying that you do track certain things, off season, in season. I want to talk a little bit about the Loden app. I know that you use it, you've been using it for years, and what consistency in your jump metrics tells you over the course of the calendar year. I think you had 24 jumps over the past 12 months. So you're averaging about 2 per month, and 23 out of 24 were all within the same, you know, range parameters on key metrics, which shows and backs up your consistency. It backs up the consistency of your routines, taking care of your body, making sure that you're prepped every day, and that work that you control. So just talk a little bit about, you know, I guess what having that provides you.
Yeah. First off, the app is pretty cool. I think just having data to track. I mean, yeah, you want to have a good understanding of your body, but there's certain things that your brain and your body just can't really tell you. You do need some cold, hard data to show you. So having the app for me is cool. Matt stays on top of me about making sure I get my jumps in. But for me, it's as you're starting to get older, I think it's important to track like your trend. Obviously we have 4 years of jumps and we're trying to keep those as consistency. The word keeps coming up, consistency. It's like consistency, right? How can I keep all my jumps within a great range, my RSI, my jump height, my jump power? How can I keep those in that same range for as many years as possible? What does that tell me? It tells me that my body is stable, which will prevent injury. It tells me that my routines are on point. That means that I'm doing a good job of making sure my body is ready to perform at a high level. And then also from like in a, just a readiness standpoint, mentally knowing, hey, I may not feel good, but my body is still moving at a high level for what my numbers are. So mentally, that's just as important. You just talked about it. Like, this game is so mental that there's times where you may feel like trash, but it's like, all right, well, but my body's still moving great. So all I got to do is I just got to turn the brain off and I just got to go play. So we have data for over the last 4 years. We try to hit single leg jumps, rebound jumps. And then we'll, in the off season, we'll experiment with vertical jumps from different like loaded position or counter movement jump. Yeah. We'll do all these things just to track how the off season's trending along. Right. Obviously, like, you may have a little bit of a dip here and there. For example, like I rode my ankle in the season and we had a little bit of a dip, and then you start to see, all right, well, now my jumps are starting to trend back to our normal line. So that means that I'm really healthy. Like it's really strong and it's really stable back to where it was. You know, you can tell like, well, hey, we just went through a long stretch on the road and maybe I was here and I started to dip a little bit or, unfortunately, hey guys. So unfortunately, sometimes like when I bang my neck up at, we're talking about in Philly, I had a couple days of no activity. I actually saw a jump in the right direction because I wasn't on my feet as much. It gave myself some time to heal. So having that is extremely beneficial. I think it's a thing that a lot of players should track as well. Just mentally and physically, I think it gives you a little bit of an edge.
Matt, let me jump in here and kind of something we had a conversation about yesterday offline regarding a different player or prospect. We won't say who the name is. But you had explained to me that this guy had his jumps tracked throughout the season. It was a really productive season for this player. And that by the end of the season, that it started to dissipate in terms of like how far he was getting off the ground and the quality of those jumps. How much are you able to sort of track, I guess, the wear and tear or the breakdown over the course of the season by looking at jumps? Because I thought that was kind of eye-opening to me yesterday, and I thought this was kind of fills in the listenership that maybe isn't as, you know, privy to jump testing and the value of it.
Yeah, Brendan, I'm going to tee you up on this one. I'm going to go back to the year that you played at three different affiliates, and then you played in the fall league. And if I remember correctly, at the end of that minor league season, that was like your meteoric rise through the system.
Because he homered in front of me at Glendale. And I was like, this dude's the man. Gotta go with
Brandon. Glendale, let's go.
But it was right before you went back to Alabama, right before going to the fall league, and you got a jump in. And we had jump test data from before that season. And I was able to tell you, like, hey, like your jumps are as good right now as they were before you even played any baseball this year. And you're like, huh, like in my head, I feel like I'm a little bit run down and like, I want to shut it down off season mode. But like, you're telling me that, you know, obviously that's, you had really good routines back then too, that you were ready to go. And then obviously, you know, what Jeff saw in the fall league, what you did in the fall league, people can look up your stats from the fall league. You know, you went out there, I think you were a fall star, last man in.
Yeah, I snuck in there.
But yeah, you know, just kind of tee you up on that one, Jeff, you know, obviously poses a good question here, and we'll get into, you know, kind of a second layer to that here in a second with the sprint speed stuff. But
yeah. So I think like we're talking about, the brain tells you some things like, oh, I'm tired, but it was funny. My deadline for the season kept getting pushed back, right? I was in low A. And then I was in high A, and then I got promoted to double A, and I was in double A for a long period of time. And then the double A end of the season was 10 days before the triple A. And I was like, all right, you know, I think like this is when I need to have my stuff kind of like ready to go home. You just kind of start to plan travel. And then I got promoted to triple A. I was like, all right, cool. Now my deadline is this, right? Let's foot on the gas through this date. Like, I like, sometimes it's good to have like goals to achieve. Like, I'm going to go as hard as I can. And like, I'm not like wishing for the last day of the season, but this is the last day of the season. I can empty the tank up until here. And then I got actually put on the taxi squad for a postseason game in LA. It's like, all right, now the deadline's pushed a couple. I can go hard. I'll just be practicing with the team, but I can go hard these days. And then they're like, hey, you're going to go to the fall league. And I'm like, whoa. That deadline just got pushed a lot further. So it's like, all right, but it just showed me, it's like, I got a lot more in the tank than I think I do. But by the end of the fall league, I was like, man, I'm beat up. I'm tired. Like all the things that my brain was telling me. And I got some data from Matt. He's like, no, dude, you're in a great spot. I'm like, that's interesting. Like sometimes you just got to tell your brain to shut up, like go about your work and you may feel a little off, but it's like your body's all the data is showing you like, I'm in a good spot. Now, if it would have been the other way around, if it would have been like, hey dude, like you are jumping on flat tires. Then I need to look back and I need to reevaluate kind of how that process is. But you talked about, I've touched on like trial and error, right? A lot of this data has helped me with trial and error. Like, all right, this absolutely does not work. And then, but this does, this helps me stay strong. And my, I used to use the terminology bouncy. This keeps me bouncy for 7 months. So it was really eye-opening, and it showed me that I was trending in the right direction. And then obviously fast forward the next year, get to be around Goldie and learn from Goldie. I think it's kind of helped me push that needle. I try to just push that needle as much as possible, but also like just stay on that like good line. Like for me, it's like my baseline.
I think it's a discipline to the routine that presents opportunities, right? Because like, make no mistake about it, 162 is a grind. It's a grind mentally, but it's also a grind physically. And I think that's what Jeff was alluding to, the conversation we had offline yesterday, is that when those jump metrics started to trend south, that body was wearing down, right? Now, where you were at, and look, we're going to get to this in a second in terms of how that translates to performance on the field. Where you were at in September that year, in terms of your performance output on the field, because of your routines, because of that discipline, that presented the opportunity to go to AAA. That then presented the opportunity to go to the Fall League. And you performed at your best in AAA, and then you performed at your best in the Fall League because of all of that. Now, that there's something to the jump data being consistent and being more flatline as opposed to trending in a southerly direction that gives the club confidence to give you that next challenge, and that potentially gives you the confidence to go there and know that you're going to perform at your best, more or less. The second level to this that we started looking at this year, you know, obviously every ballpark has StatCast data outside of Rickwood Field.
The one place I wanted it.
The one place you wanted it, where you hit a 500-foot home run.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah.
How did you feel when that came off the bat? Because I can remember watching that game with my son and texting Matt as it happened. It was like, dude.
It came off like a bouncy ball.
Yeah, I hit it. 33 mile per hour exit.
I was like, no doubt. Like, I'm not one to pimp homers or show anybody up. So, like, but I hit it, and I was like, I know immediately. Sometimes I hit him and I'm like almost to first base when that thing gets out. Like I'm like, I got to get my doubles. But I hit that one and I was like, I can start jogging because that thing came off like a bouncy ball. And then I went to the iPad after. I was like, I got to know how hard I hit that. I was like, I feel like I'm really trending in the right direction. I got to know how hard I hit it. And I kept, for like the next three innings, I kept refreshing it. And there's no data. And then I went, my next at bat, I hit another one hard and I clicked on it and it had the data. And I'm like, cool. I went back to the first one. It says, sorry, no data. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
They didn't get an EV on that at all. Huh?
I was upset. I was a little upset.
That happened to me this year. Not, I wasn't hitting the home runs, but I was at a game. Somebody hit a nuke and I was like, we'll play the game where we'll guess EVs and we're in the stands. I'll be like, oh, it's a 111. And we could, it didn't register. I was so mad because it was like a shot. Yeah. Same thing. It's the worst.
I know there's no way to prove it. Some guys could call BS, but I do think that was the hardest ball I hit in the big leagues. It was like not super high. It was at a lower height, like meaning like a good angle. Like I didn't balloon it or I didn't like top spin it. And it was just put to the pull side. It just felt like my best ball. Now it was probably, you know, was it 111? It was probably like 104 realistically, but I'm kidding. But I think I hit that. I want to say that was a 110. Like, I think that would have been my first 110 in the big league, but there's no way to prove it. So I'm just holding on to the fact that that was 110.
Well, Twitter says 122 and 128. So we're going to go with that.
I had my phone was like, dude, how did you do this? I'm like, guys, man, I want to take credit, but this is not real. I'm sorry.
And in your home state of Alabama, too, right?
That was cool. They did a nice job there. The field was in great condition.
Yeah, that was a cool game.
Yeah, so outside of Rickwood Field, StatCast data, every other ballpark. And so your average sprint speed on Baseball Savant is this year was 27 feet per second. But something that we looked at was how regularly you were getting to 28 plus, right? So like averages can be deceiving because there's, you know, in anything, because they can show, you know, the guy who's, you know, let's call it 26, 26, 26, 27, 27, 27, 28, 28, 28, not in regards to sprint speed. Or it could show something that's like same average is 5, 27 and, you know, 60 something, right? Averages out to 27, right? So I read this book. It's an old book. It's outdated, but there was something in there that was interesting. And it was Edgar Renteria and Jimmy Rollins were roughly, at the time this book was written, like the same war, right? Middle infielder, same war over the course of a season. But it talked about Jimmy Rollins' value being higher than Edgar Renteria's value, despite having the same war over the course of the same season, because Jimmy Rollins had way less ebb and flow over the course of the season. And Edgar Renteria had these months where he would just, he'd be sublime. And then he'd have these, you know, 2 or 3 week slumps. And Jimmy Rollins just went out there and he was consistent every single week. And it's a lot easier to like bank on that than to bank on the guy that there actually is, you know, money science to Jimmy Rollins being more valuable than Edgar Renteria because he's more consistent over the course of 162 and not having these large peaks and valleys. Right. So kind of tying that into looking at sprint speed, I'm going to let you talk about why sprint speed's important, but you hit 28 plus feet per second at least once per week, which that relative to you was a bolt, at least once per week for 14 of the final 17 weeks of the season. And that was kind of that number we set for you to track to make sure like, okay, if you're hitting that 28, like your body's got to be in really good shape. So, just kind of like talk about, you know, how reassuring it is to have access to that information. And then, you know, kind of viewing that as a testament to your routines and then how important that is to hit your top speed regularly.
Yeah. I mean, just like with the jump data, right? You get a baseline for the sprint data too. It's like from a health standpoint, if we're hitting 90% of our max speed, that means that my hamstrings have taken on, or any soft tissue has taken on good load and I can stay healthier. It's important to ride just like a car, right? If you never push the engine on a car and then you decide you want to like max out the engine, it could blow, right? So it's like keeping those gears greased from a physical standpoint. It's like, and if we're not hitting that number, making sure that we're supplementing in some good sprints as well on the side. But so when I see that Baseball Savant average, it kind of makes me a little butt hurt because I'm like, well, I can run, you know, I feel like I'm not a burner, but I was like, I can run. The average gets me because, you know, if you hit a ball at a certain velocity that says, oh, this has a possibility to be a hit in the pitcher's stand right there, and I don't run 28 feet per second, then it kind of lowers, or however, like whatever the batted ball data that says you shouldn't, this is what the average sprint speeds are or whatever. So I know some of them get thrown out, but it may keep some of those, so it kind of lowers that average. So we started tracking it ourselves, and it was like, all right, I'm hitting 28. That means my routine's in a good spot, my body's moving good, and it also means that I'm able to get on the bases, which is good, because if you don't, like, hey, man, we don't have any sprint data, it's like, well, I'm probably not hitting any balls in the gaps, or I'm probably not putting enough balls in play, because I'll beat out a couple ground balls a year on balls that, you know, are just tough plays for infielders. But I think that that sprint speed, it's like teams also use that information, right? It's like, well, this guy has stayed consistent in his body, right? Aging is a real thing. It's just who you are, who we are as humans. It's like, if you can show teams that you are, you know, this guy right here, not just like, oh, like athletically he's really falling off, then it will keep you around longer. And for me, being able to pop out in the outfield or second or third, or maybe even emergency filling at shortstop, it's important to show that athletically I can do that. And how do we track that? Jumping and sprinting.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to have those biomarkers, right? and, you know, have them year over year as well is also helpful, because, you know, as you do age, you can kind of see, like, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a downward trend. It's just natural when you get, you know, closer to 30 and then on the other side of 30. But we also have, you know, data for some of these things on like how fast do these things fall off. And it's like, if you can beat that fall off curve, even if you're trending in the wrong direction, because it happens naturally, if that can regress, I guess, at a slower rate than the average, then, you know, that's just one more area where you're getting slightly ahead of someone else. So, yeah, this is, if, you know, we're 47 minutes into this thing, if you're still hanging around, hope you are. We're going to get to the part where it actually translates to the thing that you watch on TV, on field. So, you know, routines, talk about your availability. You know, obviously last year you had the elbow, which was a little bit of a freak thing. But, you know, 600 plate appearances this year for the first time in the big leagues, kind of your first opportunity to get there, and you did it. I want to talk a little bit about batted ball outcomes. Especially because, you know, your first month this year, April, you know, sub 700 OPS, but there were some underlying things that suggested that that was going to turn around. So let's kind of dive in a little bit. I do want to, you know, kind of start by saying, yeah, you put over 20% of your batted balls in play at over 100 exit velocity in every month of the season. And you only really had one outlier month. Right, so you're mostly between like 20 and 24% of batted balls were over 100. Your one outlier month was September, where that actually jumped to 30%. And coincidentally, that was your best offensive month, and your OPS was almost 1,000 in September. So shout out to you again. Trending up in September when a lot of guys are trending down. But during 162, you're in it every day. You stripe a few. This happened in April a ton, where you're hitting balls on the screws and they were finding gloves all over the field. And 0 for 4 turns into an 0 for your last 8, turns into a 1 for your last 12. Like, how do you keep a level head when you know that you're hitting the ball well, but it's not translating? Because at the end of the day, like, the big leagues is about wins and losses. So yeah, if you go 1 for your last 12 and you're hitting rockets all over the field, like, it doesn't matter. That's not helping the team win. Right. So just how do you keep a level head?
Yeah, so it is a very result-oriented sport, but sometimes you do have to trick yourself. Like, you have to change your results, right? What's my objective this at-bat, right? I want to make this guy work. I want to see as many pitches as possible, or I want to go up there and I want to hit this ball hard on a line somewhere, and if it gets caught, like, yeah, I'm going to be a little annoyed, but I still won. So mentally, yeah, it's I think my longest stretch this year is like I had an 0 for 18 with one strikeout, and I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, this is, and I looked at someone eventually, I was like, how can you put this many balls in play and still not get a hit? I was like, what is, like, I'm lining out, I was like, I'm of course I'm hitting my soft tappers and I'm hitting my fly balls, but I'm like, and I was like, not one of these last 18 balls can find a hole, or you hit one up the middle and the shortstop dives. He throws you out. So how do you keep a level head? It's like understanding, like, how's my work, right? Pull back the curtain. It's like, how's my work? Well, my work's great. How's my body feel? My body feels great. Okay, well what's the problem? Well, it's like, well, this is just a brutal game. It's just torture sometimes. But you also have 162 games. It's like knowing and understanding it. Like, it is a really long season. Like, there's always a sense of urgency to show up and play today to win today, as we talked about all throughout the season. But it's like also understanding that, like, you're going to go through rough patches. Best players in the game go through rough patches. So understanding that you need to have this healthy relationship with failure, but using that failure as motivation, using it as self-evaluation, I think those are very important as well. But then also understanding, it's like when I finally went 1 for 19 and I got that hit, I was like, I was the happiest kid on the field. I was like, understanding that it's like, it is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, like embracing those little victories, the small victories. And I think that's how you don't let your mind spiral. Cause it's like, oh, I'm 0 for 18, but then and you're nothing but negative, and it creeps into your defense, or it creeps into your base running, or it creeps into your the clubhouse or you bring it home with you and it creeps into your marriage. Like those are all things that can really spiral on you. And that's finding the little mini victories in everything.
Yeah. I want to talk about BABIP, batting average on balls in play. It's a Ponce special right there. So April, you hit 228. We talked about the sub 700 OPS. And I just remember that, you know, at that point you were striping balls all over the field. They were finding gloves. You had a 240 batting average on balls in play. And 21% of the balls you put in play were over 100. And then in June, when you hit 303, and your OPS was over 800, your batting average on balls in play was 329, and you had 23% of your balls in play at over 100. So roughly the same amount of balls in play at over 100 off the bat. And your average exit velocity on balls in play in April was actually almost 3 miles per hour higher than it was in June. Batted ball luck. You know, you maybe talk about that a little bit. You know, I think this is a much more commonly discussed metric than maybe it was 10 years ago. But, you know, kind of having access to batted ball data to see that you're hitting the ball hard, to see that your month to month really isn't all that different, you know, on your good months and your bad months. Like, well, does it just keep doing what you're doing? You heard that plenty when you're hitting the ball hard and it was finding gloves. Does that ring different when there's objective data to kind of support that?
Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. Sometimes it's true, but sometimes you don't want to hear it. Like sometimes you do want an answer. Like why are you going through this rough patch? Or why am I not having any success? Why am I not helping us win? But it really, sometimes it really is just keep doing what you're doing. Also another thing that we did a little bit of a deeper dive on, was just the angles at which we were hitting. Matt was like, hey, we got to get back to you. I'm like, what does that mean? He's like, well, your angles are too high. So it's like, yes, you're hitting the ball hard, but if you're hitting the ball like this, you're going to get caught. What if you lower the angles? Because one thing that's made me successful is I just like just hitting liners all over the field, right? If you hit the ball lower oppo, and then it naturally trends higher to the pull side because you're just finishing your swing and you're catching it more out in front, then you're going to have more success. So yes, it was keep doing what you're doing in terms of like competing and getting the barrel on the ball and being in a good position and all those things. But it's like, hey, in your work, maybe we work on these angles a little bit. We're a little bit more aware of using all the data, right? The TrackMan, it's like, all right, I'm hitting these balls lower oppo and I'm naturally transitioning. I'm 8 degrees oppo, I'm 12 degrees to center, and I'm 17 degrees to the pull side, give or take a couple. It's like, all right, well, now we're really talking about that trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I just remember early in the season, you're hitting some balls really hard and you're hitting them really good and you're squaring them up and you were on the barrel. And I can't remember who you guys were playing. I can't remember who you guys were playing, and you hit a ball with like the ninth inning and you hit a deep fly ball to left field. And it said it would have been a home run, like on StatCast or whatever. It said it would have been a home run in like 27 out of 30 ballparks. And it was caught at the wall. And then I think it was like a couple days later, you hit another like 100 plus at like 28 or 29 to the left center gap. And it was caught before the warning track because Busch Stadium's huge.
Yeah.
And then I think you were in Arizona and you hit a ball that was like a home run in 29 out of 30 ballparks. And I think that one got the wall and you got a triple out of that one. So that was good. But it was like early on in the year, you were hitting a lot of hard fly balls at like optimal launch angles, you know, per, you know, common rhetoric. And you're hitting it to the big part of the field and they were just getting caught up. I think angles are huge and kind of understanding who you are as a hitter. And I think you do that probably better than most. It's kind of understanding, you know, what you do best and kind of how that contributes to, you know, your role on the team and everything, who you are as a baseball player.
I think it can also be an approach thing too, right? I mean, yes, I want to hit the ball hard, but maybe like I'm not trying to, you know, pick your spots, pick your guys to do some damage versus, oh, I'm just going to do damage on everyone. Some guys you do have to like, hey, this guy's a backdoor cutter guy. Maybe I'm looking to shoot this guy the other way versus trying to get this guy out in front. Now, if it leaks a little bit and you have that right path, then you can do it. But it's like picking your spots, knowing the situation of the game, picking the guy, all these things. How are you feeling? And then you can pick your spots and when you want to do some damage.
Yeah, so I guess all of that to say, you know, at the end of the day, your first half stats, you hit .276 with a .756 OPS and a .303 batting average on balls in play. Your second half, you hit .280 with a .764 OPS and a .295 batting average on balls in play. It was almost identical, and that obviously is almost identical to your yearly stat line and your career stat line and your year-over-year. And it all just kind of feeds back into that consistency. But, yeah, you really get down into the micro, you know, day-to-day, week-to-week, and, like, it feels like there's all these different things going on. And then you look back on it, and it always just says 280.
Yeah. It was we were actually the last day of the year we were in San Fran. And I'm not big on numbers. Like, I like the numbers. I like the data and things that we're talking about. The expected stuff is always cool, but I was looking and I was at like 279 going into my last at bat. It's like the last day of the year. And I'm like, oh man, this would be cool if I could get into 280 for the third year. And I looked and the third baseman was back. And I was like, I could do it right here. I was like, I could lay this thing down and I could just jog in the first. But I was like, nah. I was like, we can't do it. Like, we're going to let this thing rip. And I rolled over a changeup to the first baseman.
That's funny.
That's so funny. Your batting averages, yeah, I hadn't even realized how consistent they had been. 281 in 2022, 284 in 2023, and then 278 this season, all within shouting distance.
Same guy.
Yeah, and your ISO year over year was like 0.002 points higher. On the isolated.
You roll Brennan out there tomorrow and he hit 280 for you. It's 280 in November.
Gets out of bed as a 280 hitter.
Yeah. You know, just again, it's remarkable how consistent you are given, you know, playing all the different positions. I do want to give you a nod. You know, you're nominated for your second utility gold glove. And for the first time as a second baseman, you know, you had over 400 innings at second base this year. You were above average in DRS, outs above average, FRV, UZR, 150, all the advanced defensive metrics. So that's trending up your infield defense there. And then Jeff mentioned it earlier, eight different slots in the batting order in 2024. You know, four different slots with 80 plate appearances, 1, 4, 5, and 6. The positional flexibility, I think, is a little bit more understood. I don't think people fully grasp, you know, the lineup flexibility and how that could potentially impact. And it clearly doesn't impact you. You just Mr. 280 over there. But yeah, despite all of these things, playing all these different positions and being in eight different spots in the batting order, per weighted on base average and WRC plus, you know, two popular offensive production metrics, you were the second best hitter on the Cardinals in 2024 with at least 300 plate appearances. So tip of the cap, if I had flowers, I'd give them to you, but they don't grow here in November because it's been snowing for two straight days.
Nice and warm. I'll grow them here.
We got new stuff popping up. It's been 80 for 2 days here. So,
oh, wow.
Oh, it's spring is sprung.
Wow.
80 here. Dixie's letting it eat right now.
Oh,
we got babies.
Brennan has it all. He's got crying babies. He's got barking dogs. So, yeah. A lot going on there.
That sounds like the dog from the Sandlot.
Oh yeah.
You think it's Hercules?
Until you see her, and she's the size huge of your hand.
So. It's got that deep throaty sound like Hercules. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, Brennan's going to have a bunch of neighbors in 30 years. Jeff, he's going to tell stories about.
Jeff, you got anything else for Brennan before we let him go?
No, I think it's been an hour. We've had him on the hot seat for a while. He's been kind enough to talk to us about a variety of topics throughout his routine. And just, you know, handling some versatility, whether it's as a defender or as a hitter.
I do want to shout out real quick that he is reintroducing cross training this offseason. When I first met him, I hadn't even said a word to him yet. I walk into this gym where he's working out, and there's a punching bag, and I just see him roundhousing that thing.
Really?
So for anybody who's listening, and Brendan took a lot of balls up and in early in the season, he is not the guy you want charging the mound.
No.
But Brendan, what is the
– I was grabbing the monster.
Oh, there.
Here we go.
Here we go.
And all our
glory. She's barking.
Ooh, all good.
We're good.
Now, you got back to training mixed martial arts. Talk to us a little bit about that.
It's
and why people shouldn't throw up.
I think it's something I enjoy. Obviously, I think it's just another movement pattern. It's another way for me to be athletic, for me to maintain some kind of rotational explosiveness. Growing up in a military family, I always enjoyed wrestling and everything. We pushed the furniture out in the living room, and my brother and my dad and I would go at it. So I think it's something that I think, like we talked about, instilled in you as a kid. It's just something that I enjoy. And, I'm not fighting anybody, but I'll hit some mitts, hit some bags, things like that. And it's pretty cool. So I actually came across when we were in Nashville. I met guy's named PJ McMahon. He was an awesome trainer. We did some Muay Thai, some kickboxing there. It's just, what a great coach, man. I learned a lot on a few weeks span, but it's something cool, just something to keep it different.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mess with the St. Louis Cardinals next year and it could turn into a remake of Bloodsport, guys. So,
oh gosh,
listen to that, Cubs. Don't throw up and in. You guys are going to be in trouble.
Yeah, he's way too level-headed for that, but maybe there's a Cubs fan out there that could get it.
No, it's going to be like in a Rambo movie where he's all quiet and calm and collected, and then just something snaps. He's out there.
Hit by pitch hurts less than a strikeout, though. So
it's true. There you go.
Facts.
Smart words. All right. To wrap this up, we want to thank Brendan Donovan of the St. Louis Cardinals once again for joining us. For all of you out there, thanks for tuning in. This has been another episode of the 90th Percentile.